stand by for today's conference. It will begin momentarily. Again, please stand by. Thank you. Thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session of today's call, you may press star 1 to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'll turn the call over to Mr. Tom Skinner. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Shirley, and thank you, everyone, for joining us for another release of a Vital Signs from the CDC, this one on drinking and driving among high school students age 16 years and older, United States, 1991 to 2011. With us today is the director of the CDC, Dr. Thomas Frieden, who will provide some opening remarks, and then we'll move to your questions. Also with us to help answer questions, if necessary, is Dr. Ruth Schultz. That's spelled S-H-U-L-T-S. She's an epidemiologist in CDC's National Center for Injury Prevention and Control. So we'll turn it over to Dr. Frieden, and then we'll move to your questions. Dr. Frieden.
Hello, everyone, and thanks very much for joining us today. The topic today is about teen drinking and driving. Motor vehicle crashes remain the leading cause of death for teenagers in this country. There are more than 2,000 teens aged 16 to 19 killed on the road each year, and many of those deaths are alcohol-related. Today, I'm going to discuss the findings from a new CDC Vital Signs study on drinking and driving among high school teens in the U.S., and also what can be done to prevent teens from getting behind the wheel after drinking alcohol. There's really good news in some of the data here. Teen drinking and driving has dropped by more than half in the past 15 to 20 years. Because of that, 9 out of 10 high school teens are not drinking and driving, as of our most recent data in 2011. But it's really important that we keep up the momentum. Almost a million high school teens age 16 and over drove after drinking alcohol in 2011, and we calculate that high school teens were responsible for about 2.4 million episodes of drinking and driving a month. Drinking and driving is very risky for any driver, but especially for young teens. In fact, young drivers aged 16 to 20 are 17 times more likely to die in a crash when they have a blood alcohol concentration of 0.08 than when they've not been drinking. And of course, even without alcohol, teen drivers are at a much higher risk of having a serious or fatal accident than adult drivers. Teens who drink and drive are also more likely to binge drink, which is defined in this survey as having 5 or more drinks of alcohol in a short period of time. In fact, 85% of teens in high school who report drinking and driving in the past month also say that they binge drank or had 5 or more drinks in one setting. 1 in 5 teen drivers who was involved in a fatal crash had alcohol in their system in 2010. But we know what we can do to keep teens safe and others safe on the road. There are a few things that make a really big difference. One is minimum legal drinking age laws, which are present in every state and make the minimum legal drinking age 21. A second are zero tolerance laws, so teenagers can have no alcohol in their system when they're driving. Any alcohol at all is a violation of the law for teens. Third, graduated drivers' licensing systems, which help new drivers get more experience under less risky conditions. Every state in the country has a graduated driver license system, but rules differ from state to state. the spread and enforcement of graduated driver's license laws is a real success story for the past decade. We've seen teen driving fatalities fall by nearly 40% in less than 5 years because of graduated driver's license laws as well as other interventions. And we calculate that if every state had a strong graduated driver's license policy, we would see further reductions in the number of teens aged 16 and 17 who are getting into serious or fatal accidents. But more needs to be done to protect young drivers. Everyone shares the road with them, and therefore everyone has a risk of making sure that risks are as low as possible. States and communities can enforce existing policies, such as those that I've mentioned. Pediatricians and other healthcare professionals can screen teens for risky behaviors, educate teens and parents, educate parents of new teen drivers about the need to enforce rules of the road, including possibly using parent-teen driving agreements, and reminding parents to lead by example as safe drivers, starting even before their child is old enough to drive, because children see how their parents drive from a young age and model that behavior. Parents are a key part of the equation here. Parents can understand that most teens who drink, unfortunately, both drink and drink to get drunk. Parents can recognize the dangers of teen drinking and driving, and that teen drivers are at much higher risk of crashing after drinking alcohol. Parents can provide teens with a safe way to get home, such as picking them up or arranging for a safe ride or a cab if their teen driver has been drinking. Parents can model safe driving behavior, and parents can complete a parent-teen driving agreement and enforce rules of the road, such as never drinking and driving, following state laws, wearing a seatbelt on every trip, limiting nighttime driving, limiting the number of teen passengers, never using a cell phone or texting while driving, and following speed limits. The percentage of high school teens who drink and drive is substantially less now than it was 15 to 20 years ago. We've seen really good progress, a decline of more than half, but still, one in every 10 high school teens engages in behaviors of drinking and driving together in a way that endangers their own life, the life of their passengers in their car, and the lives of others around them on the road. We're moving in the right direction, but we need to keep up the momentum. As a parent of a teen, I know that almost nothing could be worse than having your child die tragically and preventably. And teen driving and drinking is a major risk factor. The leading cause of death for teens in our society is road vehicle crashes. And reducing teen drinking and driving is something that we can do to reduce those even further. So thank you all very much for joining. We can now have time for some questions.
Shirley, we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you. At this time, we're ready to begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your line and record your name clearly. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. And one moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Kathleen Dohoney with WebMD. You may ask your question.
Yes, thank you. The parent-teen driving agreement, what kinds of things should be in there?
There are certain key components of a teen-parent agreement, including never drinking and driving, following state graduated driver's license laws, wearing seat belts, limiting the number of passengers, obeying speed limits, and importantly, contacting the parent if there's a problem and having a way to get a safe way home if the teen or the driver who the teen is with has been drinking. There is a CDC model parent-teen driving agreement at cdc.gov. Parents are the key.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Next question, Shirley.
Our next question comes from Caitlin McGlade with Congressional Quarterly, The Heartbeat. You may ask your question.
Hi. Yes, my question is about how the survey was conducted. I understand that it was that it sort of accumulated a lot of evidence from surveys that were taken voluntarily by teens. Were there any, I guess, margin of error taken into account of whether or not teens are just more likely to not admit to drinking and driving now?
This is Dr. Frieden. I'll start that, and then Dr. Schultz will comment further. There are two sources of information for the study that we're releasing today. One is what's called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey,
mm-hmm.
And that's done in schools. It is self-reported data, but because teens might over or underestimate some risky behaviors, we can only say what the self-report is. The second source is from fatal crashes, where actually alcohol in the blood is measured of teens who tragically died on the road. Dr. Schultz?
Excuse me. Yes, and you're correct that that we looked at the national YRBS surveys from 1991 to 2011 to report the national information. And then we looked at 2011 national data and also state data from 41 states to look at the percentage of high school students age 16 and over who report drinking and driving by these 41 states.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alexandra Sifferlin with Time.com. You may ask your question.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm wondering how these numbers compare to adults. What are the relative rates of drunk driving deaths in teens versus adults?
Teens who drink are much more likely to get into a crash than adults who drink. Of course, no one should drink and drive above the illegal limit. Dr. Schultz?
Mm-hmm. Overall in the United States, we see that about one-third of all traffic fatalities are alcohol-related. Excuse me. In teens ages 16 to 19, in 2010, about 20% of those teens had some alcohol in their blood at the time of the fatal crash. So we're looking at around 20% for teens 16 to 19 years old involved in fatal crashes and somewhat higher for the general population at around 33%.
Just for context, it's important to recall that every state in the U.S. has a zero tolerance law, which means that anyone under the age of 21, for people over the age of 21 in the U.S., the illegal limit is 0.08, but for people under the age of 21, any alcohol at all is illegal and is a serious violation of driving laws. And we've seen that teens are highly susceptible to riskier driving if they've been drinking at all.
Next question, Shirley.
And again, if you have a question, press star 1. Our next question comes from Norlina Gullett with ABC News. You may ask your question.
Hi. Yeah. We were wondering if someone could maybe attest to some of the differences by state.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So we've looked at 41 states, and Table 2 of the MMWR has that, and we have a couple
right.
of maps which show some regional trends. There are a few states for which we don't have data, either because the response rate was too low or the question wasn't asked or they do a different type of survey. And then we've seen some states that have higher than average rates of drinking that tend to be both in the South and in the upper Midwest,
mm-hmm.
And then some states that have lower than average teen drinking, which is more kind of in the center of the country. So we've got some maps that show some fairly substantial differences among states, and the table in the mm-hmm. study indicates which of those differences are statistically significant for the 41 states for which we have data. So if you could kind
mm-hmm.
of...
I saw that. I think any hypothesis as to why some of the differences as far as teen education or...
Some of it is the policies that are in place.
Okay.
And we know that policies that affect adult drinking also affect teen drinking.
Okay.
So particularly for the for the upper Midwest, those are generally the states that have the highest adult drinking rates as well. Dr. Schultz?
That's anything really correct. There's not much to add to that. The one thing that I might add is that we saw about a threefold difference in the percentage of high school students who reported drinking and driving, with the low of almost 5% in Utah to a mm-hmm. high of almost 15% in North Dakota.
Yeah, I saw that. Okay. Thank you.
Next question, Shirley.
Thank you. Next question comes from Christian Bowden-Bensel with Oregon Public Broadcasting. You may ask your question.
Yeah, hi. You talked a lot about kind of what can be done to keep this percentage dropping, but I'm not quite sure I understand why this has happened. What has happened over the last 20 years that's kind of made these numbers drop?
So a few things have been consistent trends. One is that every state in the country now has a zero-tolerance law. So if a teen has any alcohol in the system while driving, that's against the law. That was not the case 20 years ago. Second is the legal drinking age is now 21 in every state in the country, and that was not always the case. The third are the, over the past decade, the spread of graduated driver's license laws, which have been very effective at reducing risky driving, including drinking and driving. Those are probably the three major trends here. And I think there's also a broader recognition that drinking and driving is not okay. A generation ago, it wasn't unusual to hear one for the road in terms of a drink. And in fact, there's a very interesting history of that, of the movement to reduce drunk driving that's just been published. But the by that title, One for the Road. But now there is really a social understanding of how dangerous drinking and driving is and how unacceptable it is, because it endangers not just the driver and the passengers, but the whole community. And there is now a sense that friends don't let friends drink and drive. And so if you think about the broader social change of from One for the Road to friends don't let friends drink and drive, that's a major change in our society, and I think that's one of the things that's really driving the progress here, and one of the reasons why 9 out of 10 teens don't drink and drive.
Can you give us the history of that One for the Road? What is the story there? What was that about?
It gives the history of a couple of groups, Mothers Against Drunk Driving and RID, R-I-D, Reducing Intoxicated Driving, that were very effective in advocating for laws against drunk driving at the state level and federal level. And it outlines the history that in popular culture, for many years, intoxicated driving was seen as almost funny and acceptable and not seen as the terribly risky and irresponsible behavior that it is.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Caitlin McQuaid with Congressional Quarterly, The Health Beat. You may ask your question.
Just another question here. How much is, since the rates are lower than they were 20 years ago, and now it seems like the buzz is all about teens texting and driving, how much is texting and driving replacing teen drinking and driving, if it is at all, or how much is it having an impact on, you know, whether or not that is the new up-and-coming big threat, or is drinking and driving still the biggest threat?
We know that both of them are big threats. Fortunately, we're still seeing declines in motor vehicle crashes, but the increase in texting is a major potential risk and something that we need to continue to address. Dr. Schultz?
That's correct. We have a number of surveys that indicate that teens do text and drive. Most states are now passing laws that prohibit texting and in most cases also cell phone use among these newly licensed drivers. These are new laws, and so we're waiting to see the effectiveness information on those laws.
Could you give me an example of a state that's doing something about limiting cell phone use for inexperienced drivers?
We can get back to you with
okay.
Specifics.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the primary thing that's being done is passing legislation. And we'll get back to you with information about more local programs.
Okay.
If you'll call our press office, 639-3286, area code 404, we'll make sure we get that information to you. Shirley, next question.
And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, just press star 1. And one moment, please, for our next question. And at this time, I'm showing no further questions.
So let me just wrap up and add in answer to one of the earlier questions that we know from the YRBS data that over time, teens are both drinking less and driving less, and furthermore, that the combination of those things is down by even more than any one of the two. Teen drinking and driving remains a serious problem. Road crashes are the leading cause of death in teens in this country, and alcohol is a contributing cause to many of the crashes and deaths. 9 out of 10 kids are not drinking and driving, but that leaves nearly 1 million kids, 2.4 million episodes per month of drinking and driving, with the vast majority of those being kids who binge drink when they do drink. We have effective ways to reduce drinking and driving, including graduated driver's licenses and parental involvement, and we need to keep up the momentum so we can make further progress reducing teen crashes, teen injuries, and teen deaths. Thank you all very much for your interest.
Thank you, Shirley, and thank you all for joining us. Again, if there are any follow-up questions or reporters needing additional information, please call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. Thank you.
Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.